Welcome to Selling for Dummies. Don't let the title fool you, though. In this book, I'm not just talking about selling products and services to businesses and customers. I'm really talking about people skills. To be successful in sales, you must have a cooperative attitude, good listening skills, and a willingness to put others' needs before your own. That's why having selling skills in your arsenal will help you have more happiness and contentment in all areas of your life. By listening to Selling for Dummies, you can gain more respect, more money, more recognition, more cooperation from family members and friends, more control in negotiations, and of course, more sales. Selling is an art. What is selling? It's not always what you think. In the strictest sense of the word, selling is the process of moving goods and services from the hands of those who produce them into the hands of those who will benefit most from using those goods and services. However, selling is really an art that involves understanding the selling cycle, questioning your way to success, and making selling your hobby. Understanding the selling cycle. If you're selling anything, a product, a service, or even yourself, if you're trying to land a job or an important promotion, recognizing these seven steps in the selling cycle can put you ahead in the game of selling. Step number one in the selling cycle is prospecting. Prospecting for sales is a lot like prospecting for gold, except that instead of using a burrow, a pick, and a shovel, you're using strategies to find the people to sell to, and then selling to the people you find. Prospecting means finding the right potential buyer for what you're selling. The best place to start your prospecting is with people who already have paid money for products and services similar to yours. The second step in the selling cycle is making the original contact. You've found the people. The next step, the original contact, is when you actually meet them. Do you know that people make many decisions about you within the first 10 seconds of meeting you? That's right, within 10 seconds. You're either chopped liver or prince or princess charming. What does 10 seconds feel like? Take a stopwatch and time it. It may seem like a long time, but you must come up with a way to maximize those first 10 seconds. You must give the impression that you really do have something to offer others. Step number three in the selling cycle is qualifying the decision maker. At this point, you've found your prospects, you've made an initial contact, and you've uncovered a certain level of curiosity about your product, service, or offering. Now you need to determine whether you are offering what the prospects need and whether they can really make a decision. The fourth step in the selling cycle is delivering the presentation. This is the show. This is where you get your potential clients' senses involved. This is what major companies prepare for by investing hundreds of thousands of dollars and hours in graphics, models, and samples. Presentations can be as simple as giving out a brochure with a quick explanation, or as complex as what you might see at a trade show, including bells, whistles, food, clowns, and fireworks. How you present your show depends on what you represent and the investment your prospects are making. Step number five in the cycle is to address the concerns of your prospects. How do you handle negative comments or objections that might come up? If any arise, explain yourself in as simple, unemotional terms as possible. Closing the sale is the sixth step in the selling cycle. It's the fun part, the moment when you tie it all together, the moment when what your client needs and what you're selling become as one. Getting referrals, if you have to, is the final step in the selling cycle. For many seasoned salespeople, referrals are a major source of new business. Clients who contact you because of an existing client's recommendation are usually more inclined to own your product or service or even idea than are the cold call clients. In fact, pre-qualified referred leads are slam dunks. Why? Because they already have a positive feeling about you and your offering. And the source of their positive feeling is someone they already know and trust. Studies show a 60% closing ratio with a qualified referral. Compare that impressive figure to the closing ratio of 10% with a non-qualified referral. and you get a good idea of how much harder salespeople have to work on cold calls. Don't get left out in the cold. You can become successful at getting referral business. It just doesn't make sense to give all of those choice customers to your competitors. So, there you have the 7 steps in the selling cycle. Prospecting, making the original contact, qualifying the decision maker, delivering the presentation, addressing concerns, closing the sale, and finally, getting referrals. We'll take a closer look at each one of these later on. Questioning your way to success. Selling or persuading requires you to get a lot of little agreements that lead to a big final agreement. To get those little agreements, you must have learned 2 fundamental communication skills effectively: asking questions and listening. People love to feel that what they are saying is important to someone else. By questioning and encouraging others to talk, you are in essence telling them that you're interested in them and their needs. You're doing the opposite of what the stereotypical salesperson does. You're not being pushy by talking their ear off. Instead, you are pulling answers out of them. There's no pushing about it. Asking questions is very low-key, non-threatening, and effective, not only in selling, but also in building personal relationships. One of the most popular questioning techniques is called a tie-down. Tie-downs involve making a statement, then asking for agreement by adding a question to the end of it. Some of the most effective tie-downs are these: isn't it, doesn't it, wasn't it, couldn't it, wouldn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree, didn't he, shouldn't he, couldn't he, wouldn't he? You see, the goal of using tie-downs is to get the person thinking in the affirmative about the subject you've just tied down. While they're agreeing with you, you can confidently bring up whatever it is you're trying to get a commitment on. Professional salespeople often use tie-down statements such as this: a reputation for prompt professional service is important, isn't it? Who can say no to that? The salesperson who asks such a question has begun a cycle of agreement from the prospect who, hopefully, will continue to agree all the way through to the closed sale. Here's another questioning technique that you've certainly seen or heard. It's the alternate advance question. You may not have recognized it as a sales strategy. When you use the alternate advance question, you give your prospects 2 acceptable suggestions. Listen to this example, and I'm sure you'll see. I can arrange my schedule so we can visit on Thursday at 3, or would Friday at 11 in the morning be better? Either answer confirms that you have an appointment. The next is called the porcupine, and it's one of my very favorite questioning strategies. Picture now, if I were holding a prickly porcupine and tossed it at you, what would you do? Instinctively, most people would either jump out of its way or catch it and quickly toss it back, kind of like a game of hot potato. Try to remember this technique when someone asks you what could be a loaded question. You either want to sidestep it or toss it back. How do you toss a question back? Ask another question about that question. Here's how it might go. Suppose that a prospective buyer of your vehicle ventures this seemingly innocent question: does this car have a warranty? How could this question be loaded? Think about it. If you answer yes and they don't believe in warranties, what does that get you? A negative response, right? On the other hand, if a warranty is important to them and you simply answer yes, what happens? They register that fact and you don't necessarily move forward in the process of selling the car. Instead, answer with a question of your own to clarify why they're asking. For example, is having a warranty something you're interested in? Now you've thrown that porcupine back, and you've lessened the sting of its bristles by asking for clarification or elaboration. If having the warranty is a major decision, you'll know to bring it up again if your prospects hesitate in making a final decision. And if the warranty is a negative for them, then you'll know to steer clear of mentioning it. Another questioning technique is called the involvement question. This simply means using questions to help your listeners envision themselves after they've made a decision to agree with you. If your marketing office equipment, for example, You could involve them with a question like this. Who will be the key contact for us to train on the use of this machine? Now you've got them thinking about implementing training after they own the product, not about whether or not they'll own it. That's selling. Listening. Asking questions can be a waste of time, though, if you don't apply the second skill, listening. My years of experience with millions of salespeople have proven to me that the top people have one very important characteristic in common. They are great listeners. They listen not only with their ears, but with their eyes. They watch key body language signs that people give while they're speaking, and they use the knowledge they gain from listening to their advantage. The top people in selling are not interesting extroverts who control conversations by talking and pushing their knowledge and experiences upon others. Instead, they're interested introverts who have learned to control by asking questions and listening to answers. The answers to their carefully crafted questions almost always prove to be to their advantage. If others feel important when they're with us, they will make us important to them. As you grow to be a master salesperson, remember to practice these two fundamental communication skills, asking questions and listening carefully. Make selling your hobby. Many people like to keep their business and personal lives separate, and in some cases that's necessary. For example, if you're a psychiatrist, you wouldn't want to limit your friendships to the people you've treated, would you? We have to have balance in our lives in order to fulfill ourselves. However, work and enjoyment shouldn't be two separate categories. I find it unfortunate that so many people have jobs that fit my definition of work. As I see it, work is anything you do when you'd rather be doing something else. If you're doing exactly what you want to be doing, it should be called fun and a favorite hobby. In most cases, treating your business as your hobby greatly increases your satisfaction and the enjoyment you get from your business. That's because you'll constantly be tuned into learning new things that will make business more fun and more profitable. I have to believe from my own personal experience and from watching my students over the years that learning something new stimulates the area in our brains that causes us to experience pleasure. When this starts happening, your business eventually will become your hobby. Someday you won't have to convince yourself anymore that business can be fun. The marriage of the two will become second nature. Preparation is the key to winning in negotiations, persuading others, and selling products and services. Be a winner. Do your homework. Prospecting. Remember the selling cycle? First is prospecting. Finding the people who need what you have. This assignment is vital. You can master everything else I say, but if you never get the opportunity to get in front of the right people, all the selling techniques you've learned add up to naught. Here are 10 strategies for finding the right people. Strategy number one, mine the people you already know. You don't conduct your normal daily activities in isolation, do you? If you answered no, you already know a horde of people who could be potential prospects for your product, service, or idea. Think beyond your closest circle of friends and relatives. Besides, you probably tapped them out during your first 2 weeks of selling anyway. If you bear any resemblance to an average person, you shop every week, you have neighbors, you might go to church or school functions. Chances are good that several people in this wider circle of acquaintances may be able to benefit from your product or service in some way, or they may know others who do. In prospecting with them, your job is simply to communicate. Letting others know what you do opens many doors of opportunity for you. All you need to do is start a conversation. Here's a good conversation starter. A student of mine always wore his company logo on a lapel pin, upside down. He made a specific point of having it upside down when he left the house. Hardly a day went by that some well-meaning do-gooder didn't tell him the pin was upside down, thus opening the door to a pleasant conversation about his business. As soon as he left that person's presence, he would turn the pen upside down again and move on to the next do-gooder. Strategy number two, tap your business, social, and civic contacts. Whether or not you're new to selling, you've probably been involved in some sort of business. Even young people entering sales have held part-time jobs throughout their school careers. Business contacts can be easier to talk with than some of your more social contacts, because they prospect all the time, too. You probably can cut to the chase more quickly with them than with your personal contacts. Consider not only people you know in business, but also get involved in clubs or organizations for business professionals and prospect there. Excellent opportunities have been found in sales and marketing clubs and Chamber of Commerce functions. I highly recommend Toastmasters, a public speaking organization. When you're a part of Toastmasters, you win through what you give to the group, and you gain a lot of skill that can help you win as well. Check your local phone book for the Toastmasters in your area. Many industries also have their own associations through which you can learn valuable new strategies for approaching people in your specific industry. Staking your claim in these groups can be highly beneficial. Strategy number three, talk to salespeople you currently buy from. This prospecting strategy is one of the most overlooked. Other companies send you highly knowledgeable professional salespeople who already know loads of other people. They wouldn't be coming to you if you were in a competing business, right? Why not talk with them about sharing leads or keeping you in mind the next time they call on their customers? Any extra sets of eyes that are out there for you are of tremendous value, especially when your only investment will most likely be returning the favor sometime down the road. Strategy number four, parlay your adventures as a consumer. Send the businesses you use letters or notes thanking them for providing excellent service. Many business people publish or display these letters in their places of business or on their marketing literature. If they have your permission to use your name in promoting their business, they may also list your profession or business name. When other people read your words, they'll see how professional you are and, hopefully, remember your name when they need services such as those you offer. Strategy number five, benefit from the itch cycle. Face it, nearly every tangible product brought to market has a limited lifespan. At one end of the spectrum is computer software and hardware that can have a lifespan as short as 6 months. At the other end of the spectrum are things like refrigerators and freezers that have almost 20-year lifespans. No matter how long a product's lifespan is, every product's got one. But here's the key to this strategy. The precise length of the lifespan of your product doesn't matter. What matters is that you know what its lifespan is. Once you know that, you have a gold mine of opportunity already there in your business waiting for your pickaxe to strike. If you're new to the product and don't know its lifespan, ask people already in the business or track it yourself, keeping a file of when customers return to replace a previous purchase. When you review your past customers' files, you'll soon see that Mr. and Mrs. Jones's microwave oven will need to be replaced in the near future. It's bound to happen if it's getting up in years, say 10, 12, or 15 years old. Don't wait for the Joneses' microwave to break down and then quietly hope they'll come see you again. Get in touch with them before their microwave breaks down and let them know you have some great new products with greater energy efficiency, space-saving designs, and other all-around better features. Your call may just help them move a little quicker in replacing that old microwave. With replacement products, it's often the salesperson who gets to the customer at the right time who wins. Plan to be that person, and you'll be doing a lot of the winning. Remember, it's the early bird who makes the sale. Strategy number six, build your customer list. Any business that's at least 3 years old should have a pretty good customer list. Ask the business owner or manager how many salespeople have come and gone during that time. What happened to their customer lists? If those customers weren't reassigned to another salesperson, ask to be given the authority to contact them yourself. If your company has lived up to its promises, its customers should want to continue to work with such a fine organization. If they haven't made any purchases lately, it could be simply because no one has asked. Don't leave the door open for a competitor to come in and snatch up valuable customers. Prospect your list of past customers, and you could not only solidify their future business, but business that they will refer to you as well. Strategy number 7, ride the wave of technical advancement. I talked earlier about people having itch cycles with various products. Why do you suppose they itch? In some cases, they itch because the product wears out. In others, though, it's because of something more personal. It's a perception people have that is of great advantage to salespeople. Simply put, it's a status thing. They want to have the latest, greatest, shiniest, top-of-the-line products with all the bells and whistles you can provide. Whenever you have a new model, an updated version, or even a price change, you have a solid reason to recontact people you've already sold to. Being the kind of people they are, it's only natural that they'll want to be kept apprised of the latest changes. The key to success with this strategy is in how you contact them. Bill has recently invested in a top-of-the-line stereo system for his home. And now some improvement has been made in the product that wasn't available then. Don't just call up old Bill and say, "Hey, I've got something even better for you." That would be both pushy and presumptuous and may turn Bill off. Instead, call Bill and ask him how he's enjoying listening to his favorite music on the system. It's critical for you to be sure that he's still happy with what he's got before you bring up anything else. If there is a complaint you didn't know about and you start talking about new products, you could lose Bill as a customer forever. Once you know that he's happy, say, "Bill, I know how diligent you were in your research before investing in the T-Tronic system. Because I value your opinion, would you mind evaluating something else our company is coming out with?" See the difference? How's Bill going to react to this? You've complimented him, acknowledged his intelligence, and asked for his opinion. You've made him feel important. Of course, he'll be happy to look at your new toy now. And if it's truly better than the one he has, it's a pretty good bet that Bill will want to upgrade his system. Strategy number 8, read the newspaper. One of the greatest prospecting tools around can be delivered to your doorstep for under $1 a day in most areas. It's got an intimidating, ultra-technical name. It's called a newspaper. Top professionals read the newspaper with a felt marker in their hand, so that they can circle all the opportunities that they find. Unless you do business internationally, you'll probably want to stick to the local news, business, and announcement sections. For most people, the most beneficial portion of the paper is written about John and Jane Q Public. John and Jane are the people who get promoted in business. They have babies. They buy or sell homes. They get married. They start up new businesses. Do you get my drift here? Learning how to read your newspaper for leads only takes a few days of practice. Once you get started, you'll be amazed at the number of leads you used to glance over. Keep a highlighter pen handy. Try this experiment. Take today's local newspaper, read every headline. Circle those with stories that may hold some business prospects for you. Then do what any top salesperson who's striving for excellence would do and contact those people. You do this by cutting out the article. Make a copy for yourself, then send a brief note saying, "I saw you in the news. I'm in business in the community and hope to meet you someday in person. I thought you might enjoy having an extra copy of the article to share with your friends and relatives." And always include your business card. People love seeing that they were in the news, and they love having extra copies of the articles to send to friends and relatives who are not in the local area. By providing this little service in a non-threatening way, you can gain a lot of big business. Strategy number 9, know your service or support people. Sell yourself to the people inside your company so they will think of you when they hear valuable information. Suppose that someone in accounting knows that one of your clients has been late several times in making their monthly investment in your product or service. That's a valuable piece of information for anyone in sales. By reconnecting with that client, you may be able to make other arrangements for them. Perhaps their growth rate isn't as high as they anticipated, and your equipment or service just cost too much for them. Rather than let information like that get away, help them cut back on their equipment or make other financial arrangements. They'll never forget you and will become loyal, long-term customers. If you let such information go unaddressed, you could lose them as a customer just because they're overloaded with the necessary equipment and are too embarrassed to approach the company about it. Get in the habit of periodically checking the company's service and repair records. Ask customer service how many times your people call with questions. If you see a lot of activity, you need to get back in touch with them. Maybe they're in a growth phase, and you could help them acquire new services. Or maybe they're having some challenges with particular equipment. If they got stuck with a lemon, then you need to be the one to turn it into lemonade before they demand a replacement, refund, or your head, and you get squeezed out. Always strive to provide service above and beyond what the average salesperson would give. It will help you to build long-term relationships, trust, and referral business. Strategy number 10, practice the 3-foot rule. Many business people subscribe to the 3-foot rule when it comes to prospecting. Anyone who comes within 3 feet of them is worth talking to about their product, service, or business. Once you get comfortable with what you're selling, and in talking with people about it, I highly recommend applying this strategy. All you need to do is say hello and add that it's nice to meet them. Pay attention to them. Notice something about them that you can compliment. Once you establish a little bit of rapport, it's then only polite to exchange names. That's when you can bring up the subject of your idea, product, or service. Ask a question such as, have you ever found a product to get gum off kids' sneakers, if that's what you sell? Or use a question such as, have you been to the new gift shop on 5th and Grover's, if the new shop is yours? Then share your information. Personal testimony moves more products than any other method. I know of one man who gets some of his best leads from fellow elevator passengers whom he knows for only 6 floors. And many business contacts have been made while standing in checkout lines at the grocery store or order lines at a fast food restaurant. Car handlers at valet parking can be a valuable source of information. They learn a lot about people by their cars and how they treat the valets. They overhear many conversations about business. Now, I'm not advising you to encourage people to eavesdrop on your behalf, but never turn away a valuable source of leads either. If you've been trying to get an appointment with Mr. Warbucks, and the valet knows he's in the restaurant and will be leaving promptly at 9 p.m., do you think it would be convenient for you to be next in line at that time? Could be. How do you change these brief encounters with people into leads to build your business? I have to admit that this method won't bring you great leads every time. Even so, why walk by a potentially beneficial opportunity without knocking? Here's what you do. Take all your business cards. Okay, maybe just a few at a time. By the way, salespeople are notorious for ordering thousands of business cards at a time. In fact, you can often tell the people who are newest in sales by the huge bulge of cards in their pockets. Anyway, take the cards that you do have with you and very neatly write thank you across the front of each one. Hopefully, you haven't printed every one of your vital statistics on the cards. If you did, you have no room to print your thank you. When you meet a person, someone who's entered your 3-foot space, be warm and friendly. Introduce yourself and ask them what their business is or why they're at that place or do they live in the community. Making such banter sort of obligates them to do the same. When they ask what your business is, simply hand them one of your cards. Most people take whatever is handed them as long as their hands aren't already full. When the prospect gives you the courtesy of looking at the card, she'll probably ask about that thank you. Curiosity gets the better of most people, and they blurt out their questions almost as a matter of reflex. That's the moment you've been waiting for. At that point, you simply smile and say these words. I guess I'm thanking you in advance for what hopefully will be the opportunity to someday serve your financial services needs, or of course, whatever your service is. Be certain to use those words exactly. I guess makes it sound spontaneous. Thanking you in advance shows that you're a nice person. Hopefully shows humility. Someday places your offer way out into the limbo of the future. It's a very passive, non-threatening word. Serve your needs, elevate your prospect to a place of importance in your life. And everyone needs to feel important. When they feel like they're important to you, they're more likely to make a move that could help you. What will the prospects do? They'll most often do one of three things, any one of which is a move in the right direction for you. They'll agree to call you to discuss it further. They'll give you a time to call them to discuss it further. They won't be interested, but they'll refer you to someone who could be interested in what you have to offer. What have you got now? A lot more than you had a moment ago. Standing here in line, waiting to order your burger. You've got a prospect with a side order of referrals. You're probably asking yourself, with all this talk about prospecting, am I a miner or a salesperson? The two share many similarities. In each, you stake a claim, you bring with you the necessary tools to help dig out your own niche of success, you have a high expectation of success, you persistently and consistently work towards your goals, you have a firm belief in your ability to achieve those goals, and finally, you refuse to let others' negative reactions to your work inhibit your behavior and beliefs. You're ready to meet those contacts. Making the original contact. Remember the second step in the selling cycle, making the original contact? UCLA conducted a study of 10,000 people. They were asked what their initial impressions were of someone they later said yes to. The results were 7% said the person had good knowledge of the topic, product, or service. 38% said the person had good voice quality, they sounded confident and intelligent. 55% said it was the way the person walked. They had an air of confidence and self-assurance rolling off of them even as they approached the customer. If you doubt the power of a stellar 10-second first impression, think again. Before you arrive for your appointment or visit with a potential customer, it's important that you think about the impression you're creating. Are you really satisfied with your appearance? Grooming is important. Good clothing is a must. And how about your health? Shape up your body and it will shape up your attitude. Look like a professional, like you're taking what you do seriously. To ensure that prospects like you and see that you're like them, how should you dress? Like them is a good answer, but there's an even better answer. Dress like the people they turn to for advice. Use good judgment and common sense, and you can't go wrong. If you sell farm equipment and show up dressed like a banker, you won't have many farmers getting comfortable around you. Or if you're selling a product to a corporate purchasing agent and you wear slacks and a casual shirt, you won't make the impression you want to make either. If you're new, notice what other salespeople at your company wear and dress like them. If your company has a dress code, it probably has a good reason for that code. The company's probably done some research and determined it's what customers expect to see. Abide by it. If you're in a situation where you're unsure, or perhaps your company has no dress code and you show up wearing something that's a good bit different from what the prospect is wearing, you must work during the first few minutes of your meeting to find a way to get yourself on even footing with them. After that, it's too late. One of my most dramatic examples of this basic principle happened after about my third year in sales. I had worked hard and done pretty well in business. I was driving a brand new Cadillac, which was the real estate car of the 60s. It was long, sleek, and beautiful. I'd even earned enough to invest in a few nice suits. Well, I received a call from a woman who asked me to come by and look at the home she and her husband were thinking of selling. Driving over in my new Caddy and nice suit, I was feeling pretty good about myself. When I pulled up to the house, there in the driveway leaned six Harley-Davidson motorcycles parked in a line the way serious bikers park their bikes. Judging from the looks of these hogs, my Cadillac and suit weren't going to help me establish much rapport. A huge bearded man wearing a Hell's Angel jacket answered my knock. Glancing into the home, I could see five other guys just like him sitting in the living room. If there was ever a time that a salesperson did not have instant rapport, that was it. Nervously, I walked on into the home and decided to stick with what I normally did for starters. I said, "Before I can give you any figures on what your home is worth, I need you to show it to me." We started in the living room and went into the kitchen. Because the garage was just off the kitchen, it was the next stop. As we went into the garage, there in the floor was a motorcycle, all in pieces, that they were obviously customizing. I asked them how they distributed the weight when they extended the front wheel, explaining that I had a motorcycle too, and that I had been riding for years. Of course, it wasn't a Harley, but I was a motorcycle enthusiast. We talked about bikes for about 10 minutes, and gradually the entire situation changed. I was no longer a guy in a fancy suit, but a fellow motorcyclist. I did end up listing the home and getting them happily moved, and learned an interesting lesson about making other people feel comfortable. How you appear to others does impact how you are treated, sad as it is to say. At the same time, don't make this mistake yourself. You never know, perhaps that casual, relaxed guy in the t-shirt and shorts will soon become the biggest client or sale of your lifetime. You've taken care of your outward appearance. Now, how can you make certain that your body language sets the right tone? Most of the time, people will be the kind of people you expect them to be. That's because your demeanor, what you say and how you say it, sends them a distinct message of what you think of them. People are, for the most part, reactive and will respond according to what's given them. Therefore, expect them to be cordial, open, and friendly. When your body language and opening statements are pleasant, they'll very likely respond in kind. Now, here are 5 steps for creating a pleasant demeanor. First, smile deep and wide. Smile to the point of almost a grin. Some people forget how to smile because they don't do it much. A little tip here. Make sure that the door is closed when you practice, or someone may just throw a net over you. Do you know why practicing your smile is so important? When you first meet a person, a smile radiates warmth. If you're not smiling, or if it looks like it hurts when you do, they'll want to avoid you, and a wall of doubt and fear can go up in 2 seconds flat. But keep it pleasant. You don't want to look like a grinning hyena. If you're contacting people over the telephone, smiling still counts. A smile can be heard in your voice. When I was a manager, I put little mirrors by the telephones of each salesperson. I wanted them to see themselves when they were talking with clients. If my people saw that they weren't smiling, chances were good that the person on the other end of the phone could sense it, and it would certainly have a negative effect on the relationship. We had our people turn the mirrors over, of course, or slip them into drawers when clients were in the office. But believe me, having those mirrors made a big difference in telephone contacts in our office. Next, look into your prospect's eyes. This is a body language thing that builds trust. People usually don't trust those who can't look them in the eye. So looking them in the eye is very important. But don't go to the extreme and lock onto their eyes either. Getting into a staring contest is dangerous in any selling situation. Give your prospect a couple seconds of solid eye contact while smiling, and they'll most likely be the first to glance away. Then say, "Hi," or something like that. The style of your greeting depends on a lot of things. On whether you're calling a long-time friend, a new acquaintance, a total stranger, or the Pope, the greeting will also be affected by the particular circumstance of how you're meeting this person. Use a formal opening if you have any doubt at all about what is appropriate. Fourth, shake hands, but only properly, and only if it's appropriate. Salespeople are well known for having a tremendous desire to press the flesh, so most people expect to shake your hand when they meet you. Keep your right arm slightly bent and held by your side. If you see the other person reach toward you, you're ready. If they don't reach toward you, then you haven't committed the grand faux pas of reaching out too eagerly. To convey the highest level of trust, confidence, and competence, you need to grasp the whole hand of the other individual and give it a brief but solid squeeze. Not too tight, but definitely not loosey-goosey either. Keep it brief. There's nothing more uncomfortable than to have someone keep holding your hand when you're ready to have it back. Be aware that it's appropriate to shake the hands of both the husband and wife if you're meeting a couple. If they have children with them, it's a nice gesture to shake the children's hands as well. If the product you're selling involves the children, you want to earn their trust too. If you can tell the children would be uncomfortable with having their hand shaken, simply give them a moment of eye contact as well. And no cheek tweaking or hair tussling of the kids either. Remember how you hated it when Aunt Minnie did it to you? Last, exchange your name for their name. The handshake is the most natural time to exchange names. Depending upon the situation, you may want to use the formal. My name is Robert Smith with Jones & Company. If the setting is more casual, you may want to give your name as Rob or Bob. Whatever you want them to call you. Make sure that they get your name right before you move on to other topics. There is nothing more difficult than correcting a potential prospect who calls you Bob when your name is Rob. Besides, once you've won them over, they begin sending you referral business. You don't want the referrals asking for the wrong person and letting someone else earn your sales. The same applies for the names of the people you meet. Make certain that you get the other person's name correct. Being certain of the other person's name reduces some of the tension in establishing a new relationship and can prevent major embarrassment. Take this example from my long ago but not forgotten past. Early in my career, I spent an entire afternoon with a couple, failing to get their names clearly during the initial greeting. The day concluded with them making an offer on a home. When it came time to fill out the paperwork, I asked the husband very warmly and sincerely, And how do you spell your last name? Well, he responded with J-O-N-E-S, and boy, was my face red. Okay, the first few seconds are over, but don't plunge into your sales pitch yet. It's time to build some common ground. You do that by being observant. If you just walked into Mr. Johnson's office and you noticed that he has family photos all over the place, you should ask about his family. You don't need to know details now. Just say, great-looking family, and let him decide how much to tell you. If you see trophies, you should comment on them. If you can see that he's a fisherman and you're a fisherman too, then bring up the subject of fishing. By allowing your prospect to see the human side of you, rather than the sales professional side at first, you'll help them break through the natural wall of fear that encloses them when typical salespeople confront them. Keep the conversation light, but move ahead. Don't let this part of rapport building become too hard for you. If all else fails, bring up something in the local news. Just make sure it's not a controversial subject. Another good tactic is to give them a sincere compliment. Sincere is the key word here. Sincerity takes you everywhere. Blatant, insincere flattery gets you nowhere. A stale line like, "Gee, Mr. Gargoyle, I'll bet everybody tells you you look just like Warren Beatty," does not qualify as sincere.